thank you for joining us at TMBR Podcast. We hope you enjoy our show as much as we enjoy recording it. You can subscribe to us through your favorite podcast feed and follow us at TMBR Podcast on Instagram. You can also leave comments, suggestions, and go rate us a 5-star on Apple Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 100.
100!
Woo! 100 of Throwback Music Video Review Podcast. And tonight we will be reviewing Mask by Bauhaus.
Throwback Music Video Podcast is a podcast where we look at older, even new videos, and we watch them, we research them, we look at them, we judge them, usually about the videos that are around their time, are just what we like, what we don't like, and we, at the end of the podcast, we decide if we're going to keep them, or we're going to throw them back.
Hence the name.
The throwback. Yeah, yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, Mask is a song by English gothic group Bauhaus. It is the title track from their second album, and its music video was a collaboration with the band and the Beggar's Banquet film crew, Chris Collins and Ken Lawrence. The music video currently has 333,000 views on YouTube.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. It's not their most popular song, but that's the track they chose, though, to convey the idea of Bauhaus. Back in 1981.
And it's also, like a lot of people say, it's their best video, right? It's their more artistic.
Yeah,
and
the band certainly loves the video.
And it's like a turning point for the band, too. That's what I read in the article. It's kind of like, pre this video, Peter Murphy was very, like, angry on stage. And, like, kind of more of a, like, an angry kind of, like, mad. And then after this, he got more kind of dark and artsy and kind of more...
I can't say that because I've seen some of the gigs after the fact, and it's
still aggressive, and
he's still aggressive. But definitely, I mean, after In the Flatfield, the first album, he's definitely aggressive.
Yeah,
but yeah, like I mean, the thing is, the whole Mask album is when they're more mature. They're maturing.
Yeah, yeah.
Not more mature. Like they're just maturing as artists. Because I remember seeing too the you know their Sky's Gone Out tour and all that, and it's still kind of the same act. A little more refined, though, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, in the Flatfield era, was just like chaos and, yeah, it's coked up.
Coked up chaos.
Coked up.
The best kind of chaos?
Coked up chaos, yeah. Like I back then, when I first saw that kind of tour.
Coked up chaos tour.
I just thought it was just Peter Murphy being Peter Murphy. But no, I had no... You know, I was still kind of innocent with the whole drug use.
Are you talking about when you watched that VHS?
Yeah, that one. That one. The Target video. But that was a great show still, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, just to see it, it's crazy.
It's so crazy to watch those, I mean, when you watch those old VHSs, and, like, it's so weird, and it seemed like, wow, should I be watching this? Like,
I mean, it's almost like a snuff film kind of quality to it.
My parents find this, will they, like, throw it in the trash? Yeah. You know? I bought this. I had to go all the way to West Covina to buy this, and it cost $25.
Yes. I spent good money on $20 on that.
All
on
those
that
bootlegs?
Bootleg. Yeah.
So many of those, huh, back in the day. Now it's all on YouTube.
It's like, yeah, now it's rendered useless.
People are making money off it now on their YouTube channels.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's $25, $30 for those, you know?
I mean, that's 1990s money,
exactly.
Right? Early 90s money. That's fortune.
And no high-tech forehead VHS tracking can fix any of the...
None of the tracking issues in there. It was just bad.
And like at the end of the VHS, there's like a half of a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that, right? I have like a Velvet Underground one that I bought like not that long ago at like Frankincense. I think there's like a weird, like, I don't know, Coach episode at the end
of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Dauber and, you know, Coach.
There's like
talking.
A McDonald's commercial ad at the end.
It's a super powerful Andy Warhol videos with Velvet Underground music, and then all of a sudden, hey, Dauber.
What? That's funny.
That guy should be ashamed.
It happens. But Mask Bauhaus and Al, our resident of Bauhaus, he's wearing the Milhouse Bauhaus shirt today.
He's a Bauhaus historian.
For the occasion. Yeah. It is a landmark episode, I must say. Yeah.
He sent us readings to do for this
homework assignment. And from what I hear, they didn't read it.
Louis did.
Yes.
I read it.
Yes. Really read it. Yeah, it's a great read. What I did is I sent them a few pages of the book called Dark Entries, Bauhaus and Beyond. You can get it on Amazon.com for relatively cheap. Well, actually, never mind. $79.
Oh, hello. Whoa,
it is pretty pricey. And
it's paperback.
It's written by Ian Shirley.
Oh, I remember that book.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it.
Yeah. Right, right. There's a picture of Peter Murphy, like spread eagle, with his pubes popping out of his G-string. Yes. That I'll never forget in that picture.
Don't you have that tattoo?
I mean, the cover, you got full nip. Peter Murphy, full nip, right?
Full nips, yes. But yeah, that book came out in 1994, even though the Amazon thing here is in January 2001. It's definitely way older than that. But the synopsis is the full gothic rise and fall of Bauhaus, from their early days as glam-struck lads in Northampton, England, to worldwide cult status.
That's perfect.
Well, this is the second Bauhaus that we're doing, right?
No, this is the first time.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah. I thought we did Bela Lugosi's Dead. We didn't. Oh,
We wanted to for years.
Or Ziggy Star. I thought we did Ziggy.
We've never done a Bauhaus video. This is our very first Bauhaus video.
I mean, we've done 100 already. I can't remember all of
them. Yeah, and there was a huge pause between 99
what
and
pause?
100.
What are you talking about?
We were talking about getting them all tattooed on us, the names of every video, and we haven't done that yet. I mean, we did have the
pandemic. That was the whole thing of the premise of the one episode, yeah. Right? To
get
the
our whole backs, kind that's of right. Like a memento style on our backs, yeah.
That's true. I was running out of space, though, so that's why we had to kind of...
You're like a...
I had to gain some weight to get some more skin.
A prisoner in a Russian gulag, man.
Yeah. Need more mass out to add more names.
Indeed. So, guys, what is your history with Masked by Bauhaus?
Oh. Well, nothing with mass, with Bauhaus for sure.
Oh, yeah,
man.
Bauhaus, 100%.
Woo. But Bauhaus always scared me as far as the post-punk goth bands back in the early days.
Well, why? Why? Why did it?
Well,
because
I felt like, okay, first of all, if I dug really deep and I really got into it, I pictured myself all of a sudden like Peter Murphy on that cover, you know, nipples exposed, mesh shirt, 12, you know, 18-hole docks with maybe wearing some like those punk rock trousers, my bulge all trying to get out of the zippers, you know?
Okay.
Because you know that look,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I felt like I could. Easily, I'm capable of being.
Well,
those,
no, you could totally.
Scene,
I could
right?
see you with some cut off dickies,
yeah,
the 18
like
holes.
That style.
Were you afraid of being becoming a goth, right?
It's not about becoming a goth, but more like really living. Because I feel like, okay, first of all, let's preface the fact that we've been in the scene for a long time, and this was a very early stage of us getting into not just music, but of course the culture, mm-hmm. right?
The subculture.
And the subculture for sure, you know, the clubbing and the shows and everything that has something to do with that. And I felt like there was a time where I could easily see myself fit in.
Well, especially with the entry band, like, let's say, Joy Division.
Correct,
which
yeah.
was a pretty like an entry band for a lot of us.
Right, yes.
And then going back or going into the post-punk and mm-hmm. then, you know, kind of goth stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, you could, I mean, with an entry band like Joy Division, you could just go down that road. Mm-hmm. And you're already an angsty teen.
Correct.
Yeah, you're already depressed about a million things, you know.
But I felt like Bauhaus was like this... Once you jump off into that cliff.
Oh, no. Once you
there
go,
was no going back.
Once
you
go
you know?
B, you don't go back, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I will attest to that. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I love Bauhaus, man. I mean, I went back to them several times. I wanted to get in more to the deep cuts because I didn't really get into all the albums. I didn't even realize they had that many albums in the first place, you know?
Yeah, they had, in their first incarnation, they had like 3 albums.
Right.
Albums, and then they broke up.
And all powerful.
Oh.
Like, and also the blending of the genres.
Well, the thing about
amazing.
The thing about Bauhaus is their aesthetic, and not I guess not the aesthetic, but the aesthetic that their fans put out mm-hmm. isn't
what they are. Yeah.
Exactly.
They're a fucking artsy. Mm-hmm.
They're very experimental.
Experimental band. They're mm-hmm. so experimental.
They're very open.
Avant-garde.
Mm-hmm. Almost avant-garde. A lot of their songs almost I would consider almost industrial sounding with a lot of the noises mm-hmm. that are in there and stuff like mm-hmm. that are like almost like proto-industrial, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess maybe not. I don't know what you would call that, but it's very different than what you would when you see somebody wearing a Bauhaus shirt, you're like their music doesn't come to mind. It's so experimental and different, right. You know? It's almost you know, like,
or if you're gauging what their music is like based on the people you're seeing them like rocking their gear, you would think, oh, it's just goth or death rock. But it was really much more
it's
than
deeper,
that.
It's deeper, way
deeper.
Deeper
than
definitely
that.
Not. Yeah, it's not as schlocky as, let's say, the Batcave bands mm-hmm. back in the early 80s, you know, like Alien Sex.
Yeah, there was a lot of copycats.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, they're copying good parts of them, but they're not getting as deep as them
with
the experimentalness and the artsiness and the... I mean, when I saw Peter Murphy play, I'm like, this guy is a fucking actor. Like, he is performing,
he's performing,
you know? And
sure.
when you watch this video and you watch the videos and different things like that, see him play live, I mean, he's a performance number one, you know? All of them, you know? They all have their... You could see how they all kind of just do their serious thing because he is so
out there.
Big, you know? Like, yeah.
And to add to that, like I was telling Louis earlier, Al, that they had first dove into that punk funk sound.
Oh,
bassline, mm-hmm. you know, come on, Bela Lugosi's Dead. You got the bossa nova beat, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bass lines,
like, the fretless bass.
And you wouldn't expect that from hardcore, right? I'm saying, like, the people that are into them. It's kind of a weird dynamic.
Reggae dub.
Yeah, dub, a lot of dub bass lines, exactly. Well, the influences.
I think a lot of this, a lot of people don't get deep into, like, almost like the post-punk, where there's a lot of funk in their bass lines.
You know? Because of disco, you know?
Yeah, the disco, all that stuff like that. You get into, you know, a lot of, like, those older post-punk bands. And then even, like, Echo and the Bunny, when you hear their bass lines, they're so funky.
Very funky,
yeah. Yeah, and they're almost all bass-driven, you know? So it's like, I think a lot of people don't really delve deep. They hear the pop songs that are kind of more synthy sounding, are kind of more...
New wavy,
yeah,
kind of,
accessible, right. You know? So, yeah, man, Bauhaus is a... They're a band to be reckoned with when you really get deep into their...
How about you, Al? When did you first feel the power grab you? Because it never let you go. I know you never let you go.
During our Notes from the Underground sessions,
exactly,
Ryan.
Yes.
Yep. You know, they showed the video for Bell Goes Dead, which is The Hunger.
Let's say what Notes from the Underground was, like, this weird, very independent.
Right. It was back in the day, the UHF stations around here. Basically a music video show called Notes from the Underground by Rodney on the Rock, was it?
It wasn't him. It was just some other guy. I don't know who he is, but I think he is a DJ or a VJ.
Right, there's a VJ in there, and he would show, you know, like, obscure videos or, like, very, let's say, counterculture music videos back in the day. He would show, like, I remember seeing my first Sonic Youth music video in there.
A lot of punk, a lot of indie, but then he'll throw in Bela Lugosi's
Dead. And then he threw that in, and then I've heard about, so I've seen, because I'm through the shirts, you know, the kids love wearing the Bauhaus shirts, right? And then I saw, like, oh, so this is who Peter Murphy is? And I'm like, basically, this Bela Lugosi's Dead music video was the opening scene in The Hunger.
Correct, yeah.
From you know, that 19... 19-
is that him?
Rob Flanagan?
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, so he was the DJ.
So, yeah, seeing that, and it's like how Tony Scott directed it, of course, it's a very stylish music video.
Yeah.
And just seeing the nightclub scene in there, and just Peter Murphy's just his freaking chiseled face being shown by these light, by this light, and it's creating these crazy ass shadows. And
through a chain link,
through this cage, right? Yeah. It was just, I mean, you know, he's definitely performing. He's, you know, peaking right there, and you got David Bowie. So, you know, David Bowie and Bauhaus, we were talking about earlier, like, they touch paths, but never really, you know,
connected.
They never really connected since then. But yeah, that was my experience with them, and I was like, the male mentor, our mutual male mentor. He had the whole Bauhaus discography CD collection.
Oh, really?
And so I borrowed some of it and dubbed them.
And speaking of male mentor, one time a great friend of ours, Mark, rest in peace, he was like trying to get me into like all these music because he was introducing me to the club scene, right? He's like, oh yeah, Peter Murphy's, he's kind of like a mix of David Bowie and Iggy Pop. And I was like, and then seeing him later, I'm like, ah, oh, he nailed it on the head. You know, it's exactly who he is, or at least his aesthetics were, you know?
Mm-hmm. He puts his body on the line, but it's all show.
All show.
Yeah. He's a bit darker.
Physical, theatrical, you know. But now, were you hypnotized right away?
Yeah, yeah.
When you started listening to the music?
Around that time, too, we were in a band, right? Mm-hmm. And the way I just like, you know, when you're in a band, you start to break down music a little differently than just a common listener. Mm-hmm. And you kind of want to break down how songs are, you know, constructed. And the way they constructed music was a huge draw for me. You know, it's not, you know, like, it's cool. They're great. The music sounds great. The aesthetics are wonderful. And Peter Murphy's amazing. It's just that, but like seeing how the band puts things together, they're so experimental. And that's always been like a huge like draw for me and an influence on the music I make as well. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost hard to copy.
It's hard to copy, exactly, but it's accessible to people like learning how to play instruments for the first time. Mm-hmm. Just like Joy Division is, it's very minimal. So it is accessible if you do find it, or you could play kind of a fake it, you know, and you could get there. And as like a young kid, you're like, oh, wow, I'm kind of doing it. Like, and it gets you excited to keep going, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember for the longest time we were trying to do Bela Lugosi's Dead, right?
Yeah. We had it going okay, right? Yeah. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, if you get somebody doing the drums, like, you could kind of do it in the ding, ding, ding. You know, it's...
And that song is very easy when you think about it. It's just the hard part really is the, you know, getting the Peter Murphy charisma in, first of all, but the guitars and the effects to go along with it, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, a lot of delays are used on that in the drums and the guitars, and the bass just like haunting as it is.
Yeah.
Now, I've never seen them as a band, as Bauhaus. Mm-hmm. You guys obviously have because, you know, you've been to the recent shows, right? Mm-hmm. But I did, I'm sure you guys remember, I think all you guys were there. We did see Love and Rockets perform the grand opening night of the Classic Club Perversion.
Remember
that?
Yeah.
That it was a packed night.
That was a big deal.
It was a big deal. Huge deal.
Because that was before the Resurrection Tour.
Exactly. Now tell me, what year was that? 96. Six.
Damn. I remember we were in line and I was still like, I don't think it's really them.
Yeah. You couldn't believe it, right?
Yeah, they're playing a club? It's weird.
But that's all they knew back in the, they were a worldwide hit with So Alive.
Right.
Love and Rockets, by the way, is the Bauhaus spinoff band. Well, the band broke up and is basically the other remaining three of the band.
Correct.
Formed Love and Rockets.
With Daniel Ash taking the vocal.
Is that when Peter Murphy did his solo album, or was that for other reasons they broke up?
Well, they broke up just because they can't stand Peter anymore.
Yeah. Drugged?
Yeah. From what I read, he got sick and he wasn't around during the recording.
He did get sick.
And then when he came back, there was a rift between.
Yeah, when they were recording their last album.
Oh, okay.
It's funny too. Huh? He's been wanting him to join. Daniel Ash has been, he's like a childhood friend. Like, come on, join. But he didn't want to at first.
He didn't want to at first.
And then when he did, he started doing it. And then he didn't want David Jay to come in because he's like, no, he's too controlling, So he's like, I want a band that's my full control. But is it really all Daniel Ash? Like, he writes all the music?
No. It's collaboration.
Okay.
Really. It's collaboration, okay. But
they're all amazing.
Yeah.
Like technicality, musicianship.
They're very, like, just in sync.
I mean, that's what it is.
It's insane how tight they are.
I mean, the last show is, I mean, the classic Blood Moon show. I mean, that was, it can't get any better than that. I mean,
The Cruel World 2022.
And when they play, they don't have any extra guys playing, like live with them?
No, dude.
No keyboards, nothing?
Them. Straight up.
Percussionists? Amazing.
They do everything. Peter Murphy would sometimes play with Triangle sometimes.
Right.
They just turn up loud, and you're like, wow, that's just them playing loud.
That's
and
pro,
it's
man.
Daniel Ash busts out a saxophone,
Oh, it's crazy, huh?
Yeah. Peter Murphy come up with a recorder, actually.
Right.
When they're doing She's in Parties, there's a little solo part. He plays a recorder.
When the saxophone comes out, everybody goes, saxophone.
All together.
All together, they do it as a band.
But
officially they're not together, right? Back together? Or are they?
They were going to tour after Cruel World, but they had a whole tour plan, but Peter Murphy got sick again, and they had to cancel the tour.
Man, I hope he's okay, man.
He's okay now, but Peter Murphy hasn't been in the greatest of health. Like, he had a residency show in New York back in 2019 that also had to get cut short because of heart problems. Probably just remnants of being a druggie.
Yeah, partying.
He goes hard on his...
And performing,
he's going hard, performing. Yeah. He's not just standing there. He has a whole act that he's doing with the show. It's so awesome.
How about Peter Murphy's solo act? Familiar? I know the hits, but that wasn't really.
That also doesn't include his his Dallas.
Dallas Car.
Dallas Car, Dallas Car side projects. Well, he did that and then went solo.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a few collaborations, but he did a collaboration not too long ago with Trent Reznor.
Oh, okay.
They did, they basically did like Bauhaus covers with Trent playing the music, Trent's band playing the music and Joy Division songs. That was crazy too. That was a weird collaboration. So like they did Dead Souls. So imagine Peter Murphy singing Dead Souls.
Oh, wow.
With Trent's band playing the backing music.
But how did the Bauhaus cover sound?
The Bauhaus covers. I think they also did a Bela Lugosi's Dead, and that sounded good because can't go wrong, really.
Wow. Yeah,
can't fuck that up, especially got Trent and the actual singer.
Doing it.
But okay, one thing I forgot we always do is the song details of Bauhaus.
Oh, cut and paste.
Shoot. But we'll be right back for some pop quiz after these messages. And we're back, and it's time for some pop.
I'm not ready for the pop quiz.
It's been a long time.
If you guys did your research, I'm sure you'll nail all this. Huh. I didn't get too deep into Bauhaus history. It's more here and there. Very, very surface level trivia for you. Okay, pop quiz number one. The woodsy parts of this music video was illegally filmed in the property of this English royalty. Okay, A, the Spencers. B, the Astors. C, the Thatchers. Or D, the Crapshers.
I just read this and I already forgot it. Jesus Christ.
I'm gonna.
The Astors? Is that
the Astors?
Astors. I'm gonna say the Astors.
The Astors.
I'm gonna go with the Spencers.
Ryan is correct.
Oh, what?
It's as the Spencers.
As in Diane?
Yeah.
Wow.
Diane, Prince of Wales, the Churchill. Churchill's a Spencer, apparently.
Yeah.
I learned that
one. I know, it was like illegally, right? They did it at night, in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night.
That's pretty crazy.
Okay, second question.
It's a tight shot. You couldn't really tell where they were anyway.
They could have filmed it on here. Anywhere, in the hills of Whittier. Yeah. No problem.
I mean, you go to any alley right here in downtown and get a couple crates. Seriously, the pallets where you know, he's on the pallets. $6 a pallet.
They could have filmed it in the backyard of my work right there. Yeah. We have pallets all over all the time.
And it's not, you're right. And they never really had a wide shot of anything. It was all like pretty up close.
Yeah. Okay, number two. This track peaked the highest for the Mask album by reaching number 56 in the July 1981 indie charts. A, Hair of the Dog. B, The Passion of Lovers. C, Muscle and Plastic. Or D, Mask.
Not a kick in the eye, huh? It's not in there?
Nope.
Damn,
it's a great song, though.
Yeah. Read it again, the names.
It's A, Hair of the Dog. B, The Passion of Lovers. C, Muscle and Plastic. Or D, Mask.
Hair of the Dog.
I'm going to go with Passion of Lovers.
Ryan gets it again.
Damn. And I read it. I don't remember.
Man, the guessing skills are amazing. But this is not a single they released, though.
They did.
Oh, it was released as a single.
Well, the Passion of Lovers is. Okay. Mask was never a single.
There you go.
That was a trick question for you guys. Okay, third question. Which of these musical acts did not have a Bauhaus member in it?
Oh, here we go.
Ooh. Okay. A, The Bubblemen. B, Dallas Carr. C, Berlin. D, Tones on Tail. Or E, Pop Tone.
Berlin.
Louis says Berlin.
I'm gonna go with Pop Tone.
Louis right.
Woo! Pop Tone is like their other.
Pop Tone is basically
I know Bubblemen, but
it's Love and Rockets, right?
It's Love and Rockets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's basically another offshoot of Love and Rockets.
Berlin, is that yeah.
That's Tones on Tail.
Oh, that's Tones on Tail. Yeah.
And finally, okay, Peter Murphy performed a duet with his comic book icon on the 2012 Kamikaze Expo. All right.
Oh, wow.
A, Chris Claremont. B, Neil Gaiman. C, Stan Lee. Or D, Frank Miller.
I'm going Gaiman.
Louis says Gaiman. Ryan?
Can't see him rocking out with Stan Lee.
I'm just going Gaiman because Sad
Gaiman, man. Yeah. I'm going to go with Gaiman, too.
You're both wrong. It's Stan Lee.
What?
Yes. They sang together?
They sang together.
What did they sing?
They sang a song called This Old Black Magic.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, when I first heard that too, I remember it kind of went viral on my newsfeed on Facebook back in the day.
That's crazy.
And why were they even like hanging out together?
I don't know, but that happened. You can find a video on YouTube.
Oh, weird.
We should have done that video.
It was so bizarre.
That is weird.
Yeah. But Gaiman was probably pissed off. Like, what the fuck? How come I'm not singing up there?
Because like, I modeled freaking Morpheus on Peter Murphy. God damn it.
That's funny. Wait, no lightning round? That's it?
That's it.
Oh, you killed me here. I was studying for the lightning round.
I mean, just getting you back into the 100, you know?
You got the next episode. You'll get the lightning round for us. Okay, guys, you want to talk about the music video?
Let's do it.
This is it, man.
All right. So, yeah.
So we're at the Spencer's, right?
Well, I don't know because, it starts off with this wide shot.
It's like a nondescript. Yeah. What is it? Castle? Whatever you call it. What would you call it?
It's all ominous though, right?
Oh, it's just a shadow.
It's like dark shadows.
Hammer horror films.
Yeah, very just like a silhouette of this tall tower and a blue dusk.
You know, what threw me off was the still images and then going to the, you know, there's a lot of kind of stills.
Stop, moving, or moving and then stopping.
And I was like thrown off at that at the beginning because I'm just not used to that in music or music videos, you know, because like the music's going.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Doesn't it remind you of like, wait, did my thing just fuck up?
Exactly.
Is it, what is that called? It's
still loading or something like that? Yeah. No, but then after when I watched it a couple times and then I'm like, oh, I get it. Like,
it's part of it.
It's almost like they're throwing back to the old art films, you know, and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, because they're going for the whole German expressionism aesthetic.
Yeah, when
which
you look
I
at the,
did
yeah.
not really get back because I wasn't a movie student or anything. I just thought it was just like very striking.
But it does hit hard though when they do that.
Oh, it does.
And then some flashing lights and then pause. You know what I mean?
Those and it's stills. Usually on one of those images that they want you to get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I mean, let's keep going. I don't want to go straight Quasimodo, but let's keep going. Let's get to that.
And then, of course, you get like almost almost mummified, right? With the thing wrapped around, like a paper mache thing.
He's covered in this white powder, and you got like this tarish goo on the sides of his face that probably came out of his mouth. His eyes were just blacked out as well.
Well, he's not moving yet.
He's laying, he's laying still? on the kombucha pallet from Costco, right?
His weird racks,
They're marinating them, or
a pallet. You know, I was like, oh, the pallets.
It's almost like a pyre, huh? When they're about to burn you in the wood, right?
Oh yeah. No, it looks
like Darth Vader being fried in the.
It's very reminiscent to a funeral pyre. Right. You're gonna burn him. Yeah.
You got to imagine the quality, the lighting as well, because apparently the lights were powered by car batteries, right?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Car batteries, and like I literally thought when I first read that they actually just had cars, the headlights of the cars just beaming at them throughout the whole thing. But yeah, like,
and then a quick shot of like a Bigfoot style walking across with his long arms, right?
Oh, so
it's
so
weird,
haunting,
right? Because it doesn't. Like, who is who?
That's David Jay.
That's walking with the slick cutoffs with the shirt, and
it looks longer. Yeah.
It's really creepy.
It's very like body horror. Yeah, there's like a lot of body horror stuff in this.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And then we get back to Peter Murphy.
Cronenberg.
And to me.
Yeah, Cronenberg.
Yes. This is the scariest part, too, when that little piece kind of moves out of his neck.
Yeah, that's weird, right? Because it freaks you out, but it's just a thing, and it moves.
It just moved. Like, it fell out or slipped.
And I'm like, that's not a mistake, because. That's fucking scary.
No, it's creepy. Yeah. Well, it's, again, very Hammer horror, like that cheaply made, like, 70s, late 60s.
I mean, this has the quality of a snuff film.
Snuff film. Well, or even, like, Filipino horror movies from the 70s. Yes. It has that quality that makes you feel, like, it's very unsettling. Like, ooh.
Yeah, it's too real.
It's real, yes.
Yeah, it's guttural in a way.
Because it looks like that might have hurt or something. Right. Maybe it chafed him or something. Yeah.
But it kind of seems like, all right, it's giving us a signal that he's about to be resurrected, right? From something.
There's something's going on. But yeah, but you also get like little flash cuts of the rest of the band members. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have Daniel Ash just like, he's like topless and he got all this ashy Larry. But like Peter Murphy's totally ashy Larry here.
Yeah.
But he has like these charcoal like lines all over smudges all over his body and he's throwing up as well.
Yeah.
He's just like,
a transformation of some sort, right?
Right. Yeah. It's like an exorcism happening.
Mm-hmm. But he does the smoke too, right?
Yeah.
It's very burned. Yeah. It's very like
he put dry ice in his mouth and it's like coming out, or like he's vaping before vaping was a thing.
Or almost kind of like a, like your soul leaving your body, right?
He's
like very slowly coming. But guys, let's backtrack here for 1 second and let's go to the melted David Jay.
Okay. We're going to talk about the Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes, very reminiscent.
That freaked me out because I thought, because you know like a mirror reflection sometimes, well,
can
broken.
Right.
Yeah, you could distort your face. But then he comes from behind that glass.
And he's
and he's still really like that. I'm like,
he's toxic Avengered out.
It's kind of like.
And the video pauses on that point. We can see his face the best.
It's kind of like in the movie Top Secret when the doctor with the big eyes and he gets out of the magnifying glass.
Yes.
And his eyes really that big. That's the best part of Top Secret.
Exactly. Also, a friend of the show, Paul, when he was in high school.
Oh, no.
He had a high school, his ID.
Yes.
And back then, they would get your picture and they would laminate it.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, his picture got melted and it looks exactly like David Jay in this video.
Yeah.
He's all toxic Avengered out, right?
And it's funny enough because Paul played the bass for us
when
we were doing our bass covers. Mm. He was channeling David Jay Mask.
It's all adding up.
No, but that got me again,
that
right?
That prosthetic looks pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
That must have cost him a couple bucks, right?
They said they had a minuscule budget, according to the biography.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, those were hard to come by. You got to have an effects studio to kind of help you up with that. To get his complexion and his eyes, eye color and all that.
Yeah, this video could have looked awesome in black and white, but they chose to do it color, and that's more expensive, you know, in every way. And it was fucking...
I didn't see that coming. Was
I didn't see that coming at all. And then it doesn't, like... He's normal the rest of the video.
Exactly,
right?
He doesn't come back.
Yeah,
I would have melted the hell out of that.
No, that's
face.
The best part.
No, I think it's kind of cool because if not, we would have gotten like then you would start seeing like maybe the lines coming off of it and start getting cheesy.
Oh, that's true.
Right. You know,
it probably came off after that scene. Yeah. And it's like, oh well, it's, and then
we got one shot. That's good.
We just need the mirror thing to freak Louis out, and that's it. We did our job.
I love that they targeted Louis.
It was all for me. Right?
This one's for him.
And then
we get a lot of playing light and shadow, right? There's a lot of those scenes too. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, I like that part. It's really nice.
And you have the drummer as well. He's wearing this very ghostly makeup as well, and he's playing the drums. And the drums
primitively,
Yeah. Because the song, I mean, talk about the song for as
sure.
well, right?
Yeah.
Just like the actual song itself, it's very basic drums, very tribal. The guitars are. It's going through a lot of. Pitch delays and like slowing it down and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost spoken word, really, from him, you know, from Peter Murphy, like the way his delivery is.
Yeah. It's one of their very classic experimental
songs. Very experimental.
Very experimental. Yeah.
And it mirrors the video, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the thing, too. The directors, those two guys, Lawrence and Collins, you know, they...
Did they run the Baker's Banquet? Is that...
No, they work for Baker's Banquet. They work I guess if a band wants to make a music video, they send it out to do the, you know... Because, yeah, well, basically what they wanted to do, to convey for this one, was to show the essence of the band.
Mm.
It's not because they want to make a music video for Mask as a single. They want to say, this is Bauhaus. Because these were still the era of promotional videos.
Yeah,
MTV barely took off. It hasn't taken the world by total storm yet. And they decided, you know, this video is just going to show, you know, it's a promotional video. Like, if you know, if we want companies to hire Bauhaus, we'll show them this video. This is what they're about.
Yeah. Right.
One of their eyes is melting off. So like, it just shows out.
No, but seriously, like, you know, like if you want a band that's out there, these are your guys.
These are your guys.
Right? These are your. If David Jay's eyeballs won't do it for you, it's Peter Murphy's charisma. Yeah. You know,
at the very least.
The very least, right?
Can we get to the kiss drooling in the mouth? Fucking threw me off too, and I'm totally cool. I didn't know that they did stuff like that. And then in the thing, they would kiss sometimes to kind of throw people to just a shock value, right? Is that was like a thing that they would do?
Oh, and talking about on live?
Yeah, yeah.
Peter Murphy would, you know, do a lot of
homoerotic stuff. Yeah, just
Daniel Ash. But Daniel Ash would just play his shit. He won't be as responsive. Peter would flirt with him and stuff. But he's doing it not because he's attracted him.
But they also did it like to like get the crowd going because they knew it would
provoke.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, hate and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he does it to provoke, but also to fuck with Daniel Ash because many times those guys can't stand each other.
Was there like a thing that people were like shooting pee at them with water
pistols?
Yeah,
water pistols.
Yeah.
Like
at their shows?
Yeah,
because because of like the homoerotic stuff, they were people were angry about it and they would do that to them or something.
But I just think that's just fans being assholes.
You know?
Right. I mean, it's like
because there was like accounts too of like Peter Murphy would perform. He was talking about one time where he was just covered in spit.
Yeah, yeah.
The crowd was just spitting on him. He's just like, he's taking it right there, you know, doing his crucifixion poses and shit.
Yeah,
and he'd just
Jesus
be like,
Christ.
Freaking.
Yeah, Johnny Ryan would talk about that too, and he like would hate it, and he would stop shows when people would spit all the time.
I mean, that's fucked up, you know?
It's
come
gross.
On, man. They're entertaining,
not sanitary.
You know?
Yeah.
They're out there to make a living, and I mean, you can be an asshole.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're still working, you know?
Yeah.
It's not one of those
things. They're there to entertain you, you know? I mean, if they're putting on a shitty show, sure, but I will never spit at a band.
It's crazy.
Okay, so...
And so we get to a part where he actually turns his head.
Well, not yet, because they're doing the ritualistic way to resurrect Peter Murphy, right?
That kiss spit thing kind of
yeah,
starts
so Daniel
to wake
Ash
him up
is,
a little bit, right?
It's
Daniel
like
Ash
life, giving him life,
right?
Right.
He's like letting like his drool basically go in Peter Murphy's mouth.
Right.
David J, he walks by too.
And does like the touch thing.
Yeah,
right?
He kind of does, he closes his eyes kind of thing.
Oh, that's right. What he
But even though his eyes are closed, he still does the thing, you know, he runs his fingers through his
eyes.
You
know when somebody dies with their eyes open.
That's the classic,
right?
Yeah.
And he does that, and then you get, oh, wow, you know, like Brian Ferry, Kevin Haskins over there, the drummer.
Yeah.
He's like dressed in the nines,
right? Exactly.
He looks like a male model, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, damn.
In that scene?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's dressed in the nines, and he rubs his hand on Peter Murphy's chest, his coke-laden chest, right?
Yeah.
And then... You got Peter Murphy just convulsing, and then
he's writhing.
Amazing body acting, right?
Yes. Yeah, that back bow.
Yeah.
His classic back bow. He did a lot of movement on that back.
But it needed to be the three bandmates, right? Like having some contact with him in order for him to like
to come to life.
I guess that kind of brings the whole band into
like
the
whole
thing.
Like a Triforce?
Yeah, pretty much. Without it, he couldn't. He wouldn't be able to be what he became.
Right.
Had he not been like, you know, like affected by the three band members, right?
Because
again, this is about Bauhaus, the band,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He is what they make him, but he is also
himself. Behind his own eventually, he becomes himself.
When he does that resurrection thing, it's basically just like a side view of him doing that to really accentuate it. And then he looks at the camera, and I was telling you guys earlier how much that is fucking freaky.
Scary, dude.
It when he turns to you, like, I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know if Peter acted that or rehearsed it or all that, but that just like, gah.
Well, it's the not being clear. It's a little bit far away, but you know there is some grotesqueness happening, you know, at a distance, and your brain can't figure it out, so it's like, ooh, you know, your natural reaction is to be fearful.
It's also that weird 70s, early 80s super thin front man. Like Bowie has this too. When he has shirts off, he could do these weird things.
Yeah, Iggy Pop, man.
Yeah, Iggy Pop with their shoulders and stuff. And
Exactly. So, contorting,
yeah,
right?
Contorting. Yeah, contorting. It's gasp worthy. Yes. You know? You're just like, whoa.
But like horror monster movies use, like something inside of you is like wanting to come out. And the only way it can is through like almost destroying your insides for it to come out.
Yeah, it's American Werewolf in London,
exactly,
you know, where he's like,
transformations, metamorphosizing.
Or Michael Jackson Thriller.
Exactly. Turning into a cat
But in
monster.
Real life, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's very realistic. And you're right, that's, there's something that scratches your back. It's like,
Yeah. And then there's a scene, too, where it's like a few cutaway scenes of Peter Murphy also resurrecting, but he's breaking through pieces of plastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That always freaks me out because of, you know, when people put a plastic bag under their heads and kill them, you know, like when you're that always freaks me out.
Yeah,
like,
you get a suffocation kind
of.
Uh-huh.
Even when I like put plastic wrap on like on a bowl of like old nachos or something, you know, like I get kind of grossed out because it's
brings you back to that.
You see that, and then people trying to breathe underneath it and break through it. And
now you put it that way.
It grosses me out.
I won't look at my bowl of nachos the same way again.
Some old chicken fingers you brought back, you know. Oh, you're putting them in plastic wrap?
Were you dropping little bits of spit on it to warm it up?
It warms up?
Break it down a little bit.
But this, to me, is like the climax of the song. The best part of the song is when Daniel S. busts, like, snaps out of the feedbacks and the grunting guitars. And that...
That's the best part.
Just a very
riff.
Huge release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when they were touring back in 98, Mask, it wasn't really part of their overall set, but they threw that in. They played that song live, and I don't know. I was just like in a weird zone when that part happened. I was like, I felt like my soul left my body.
Somebody's spitting an owl's mouth. Yeah.
Are you saying that you got the little death? Is that what
I got? Yes, le petit mort. Yes, because I was following Bauhaus in their West Coast tour back in 98 in the Resurrection tour. Mm-hmm. So like they played like a few shows in LA, and I was on hand for all of them.
Nice.
And then they threw in that song in the middle of the second leg. Mm-hmm. And I already kind of knew the playlist. I'm like, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh crap, they're playing Mask.
It's like you got a musical version of the Quasimodo eye, yeah. Right?
I just like drooped down, mouth. You know, and I was only dreaming.
Get the Bell's palsy. Oh man.
But yeah. And I mean, it's amazing. There's one recording on YouTube that they did back in the early 80s of this song live. It's crude. Mm. It's a crude recording too, but it's definitely not as sharp as imagine Bauhaus now, how clean, you know, how fucking tight they are. But damn, but when that guitar happened though, I was like,
there it is.
They're so tight live. It's insane. Yeah. It's so powerful. Yeah. I mean, they have to be tight. I can't even imagine, like, I remember like they're notorious for having bad shows early, like, or kind of like,
They were bad. They're early when they were still actually an active band.
Yeah, yeah.
They're mostly rough.
But you know what? Crew. Above all, they're intact as a group, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's
a lot of... I mean, New Order's notoriously a bad live band, too, and stuff like that. But when they were... I mean, because of the guitars, it's so like loud and just abrasive. Mm-hmm. So for when it comes at you with the whole tight band coming at you, it's very powerful. It's kind of crazy,
Now, there's a scene where... I think it's Kevin Haskins... He's kind of like breaking out of a cocoon, right? Because he's wrapped into these like these dried twig type.
That's David J.
Oh, it's David J.
That's David J. He's running around.
So he's but he's kind of like trying.
Yeah,
to
like he's in the Groot safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Wall,
yes,
right, like
exactly. His protective covering.
Yeah.
And then he ends up crawling with it. Pieces of him are so.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of cool too.
You didn't see the dancing baby Groot on the side when he was going back to life.
He's doing a little samba dance.
Because David J generally is very reserved, you know, in the band. Like,
he has the shades on all the time.
Yeah, he's always cool and collected, but he's like acting out on this one, right? Yeah. It's crazy to kind of see him break this, I don't know, at least my idea of him.
Yeah.
They at the beginning and then when they're doing their separate, they're kind of Cenobites. They each have like their own little thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it doesn't really connect with the rest of the thing, but then it does with bringing back Peter Murphy to life. But they are their own little thing, and they have their own, you know, like each Cenobite is very particular.
And that's kind of like what I was getting at, where like in order for that to happen, each one had to kind of, you know, contribute to his rebirth or whatever you want to call it, right? You know what we did forget, though? There's that scene where Peter Murphy's just looking into the camera. He's during the teeth and
is
the,
that
the,
oh yeah yeah the gnashing,
because I love that part.
Yeah, that
the
part,
the purplish, like, kind of black white. They,
that's one of the really the Photoshop. It stopped at one of the photos, right?
Yeah. Right.
You
yeah.
see his teeth like coming ah.
Yeah, like I always thought, like, did they shoot? Was that an older footage that they just added in there, mm-hmm. or was it shot actually in the same, you know, in the same production?
Right.
Like,
was on the it same part of it?
I think some of those, like, solo shots, they might have filmed somewhere else. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of the bigger shots, maybe mm-hmm. they filmed there.
Because it looks like a face he would make on a live show.
In a live show, exactly, know? Right.
And that's what I thought. I always thought kind of that's what it was. But yeah, that's very unsettling. Just this, you know, like, Peter Murphy's a beautiful man, you know? Yeah. And but this
no,
like,
he looks
grotesque,
demonic,
freaking,
deranged.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like, freaking Pazuzu level face on him.
Possessed, like something's in him.
You just put that shot in the middle of a movie, like when you redo the movie, like the Pazuzu, they add more Pazuzu to the Exorcist.
Peter Murphy's face. You got Peter Murphy, David Jay just dragging himself on the on the property of the Spencers. I'd imagine that's where those scenes are happening.
I think so, right. Yeah,
sure, yeah.
I bet you the stuff with, like, you know, the Groot and the face. I bet you that maybe that was filmed other places, but then, like, the bigger, more wide scenes.
Right.
How about the one with Peter Murphy wearing that headdress?
With the horse reins around him?
Yeah. The shadows cast.
Over and over, yeah.
And he's making these contorted, very exaggerated faces.
Yeah. And he's looking right into your soul, right?
Dude. But yeah, it's like, we can't make it out. Is it a headdress? Is it a horse harness? It just strapped
on
his head.
It's like leather with like, you know, like these metal, like, thing clips to connect them.
Yeah, I think I'll find my Halloween costume.
There you go.
I'll just be David Jade and the headdress on.
So David Jade, after that, he leaves. He walks away. He's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Remember, he turns his back and walks away.
I'm not into the horseplay.
No. Yeah. I'm too cool for that. Yeah. And then a shadow is indeed cast on Peter Murphy. That. When he's missing from the pallets.
Yeah, the
right?
sepulcher.
It's just there for a while. I'm like, oh, is it? What's going on here?
Yeah,
is it over?
Yeah, it's still shot, and then it slowly fades in. But the thing is, if you see the shadow, you can see his form.
But it's just black.
Yeah, but it's just black. But then he starts, you know, with the magic of Paintbrush Pro or something like that. No, but it's a trick, a complicated that time.
Oh, it's by reverse or something like that.
Yeah, they faded him back in, so he's back in that pyre.
In his original state,
mm-hmm.
right?
And then the song ends.
Well, there was a part with the gossamer sheet, right? Kind of like on his face. Wasn't that like a little bit later after that?
Yeah, that's like he breaks that off though. That's when he gets up, right? Like they show scenes when he's all powdery and ashy, larried out.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay,
you know,
when he comes up from the he comes back to life. Yeah. I thought he was going to come back to life and kill them all. Like, you know?
Dude, it seems like right? I mean, Daniel Ash is already like he's excreting stuff from his mouth.
Yeah,
that's like his theme, right? He's releasing shit from his mouth throughout
all
video.
Of his scenes were something is coming out, coming out of him,
right? Yeah. Ectoplasm coming out,
right?
Of
yeah, it's funny that those are his slimer. Only scenes. He was the one that's featured the least in this video. Isn't that strange?
Well, I mean,
after that drooling, you know, like a mother bird giving sustenance to its young, right? It's like, I'm done, I'm good.
I wonder whose call was that, you know, like who made that decision for him? Was it Peter? Hey, Daniel, just do that, right?
He calls him Danny. Hey, Danny.
Hey, Danny.
Danny, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He calls him Danny. Hey, come on, can you do that for me once?
I think he calls him Dan the Man, no?
And, you know, like, Kevin asks, he's like, I'm just going to touch his chest. That's all I do, guys.
Yeah. This bony
and
chest.
It ends, right? It ends right there?
It ends right. But I really think, though, this was David Jay was I bet you David Jay plugged in a lot of the ideas in this one.
You think so?
Because he seems to be the one who's like, he's really like the MVP, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I told Daniel Ash was like, I didn't really want him in the band in the beginning because he's too controlling, you know? So I'm pretty sure a lot of his ideas were like in the forefront. Like, no,
he's also very like,
but they already shot 80s,
like very 80s handsome. Like he looks like he could be in even like Duran Duran or something like that. So I could see how they put him up front sort of to like bring in like not just like, you know, the goth crowd, to bring in maybe some other kind of like 80s people like, oh, that guy's cute. I'm
like relatable,
to this band, you know, like to kind of push him up front a little bit too. Because, I mean, when he's all modeled up, like he looks great.
He's got the big brother syndrome, so he always wants control, right?
Yep,
he wants to run the show.
Okay, so we'll be right back for some notable YouTube comments.
Yeah.
All right, guys, it's time for the notable YouTube comment. You know what I noticed when I was skimming through these notable YouTube comments? it's no longer usernames that they have there. They have the at names, you know.
Oh, what does that mean?
The account names. You know, so like the first comment here from at Ryan Hampton 7904. It's they have the at name.
Oh, because
now
you can do YouTube at, is it like that?
Yeah, you could at people now in the YouTube comments. Since the last time we started doing this, we just had normal handles. Now there's ats. So at Ryan Hampton says, unfortunately, artistry like this is frighteningly rare these days. In fact, almost non-existence in music. One of my top 10 favorite songs of all time. And that's a difficult list to make considering I'm not gothic in any way, shape, or form. I mean, imagine though, like, right? This song isn't a structured song. It's not. It's definitely not top 40 friendly.
No, for sure.
Not radio friendly.
It's definitely experimental in its
not mainstream. And the fact that like it can convert a person like Ryan right here.
Right.
I thought that was very notable.
I mean, the visuals and the music are amazing together. Yeah.
It's all
one. It pairs well. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like a good wine and cheese. Yeah. Okay, at Ryan Williams 1803 says,
this is all Ryan? This is the Ryan episode?
It just happens to be the Ryans are making very notable YouTube comments in this. Bauhaus and Murphy did a lot to distance themselves from goth and the label they helped create and to instead identify as art rock.
Yep.
But this video is raw and terrifying and full of excessive melodrama and has to be the darkest and best thing they have ever done. That's a little hyperbole, but I can see what
very dark for sure. Yeah, I agree.
You know, but I get what he's trying to throw there. When I was first a teen, the album Mask was the first goth rock album I've ever heard. At the time, I did not get it at all with its angular, noisy, arty energy. But I do remember being floored by the title song, this song. Now I see the video. Wow.
I'm asking your professional opinion. I don't know if you've read up on this, but what's considered the first goth rock band?
Well, there's a whole documentary you could find on YouTube on this. Okay. I mean, it can even go as far as the guy who sang I Put a Spell on You.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. I forgot his name, but it's a haunting, rather supernatural sounding song. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something like that.
Well, there's a whole host of music from the 50s, you know, when the rock and roll really was
the
coming out.
The Monster Mash could
put
it that way.
It depends really how you want to
interpret goth.
Well, there's a lot of blues songs too about death and
exactly
and
yes.
Things like that. Yeah.
Death or like just a human condition of fear. Mm-hmm. And all of that, there's a lot of music like that, and it doesn't necessarily have to have that sound of
it's
the meaning I guess behind
well,
it.
Oh, it's like I mean like the classical goth as we see it today.
I mean
rock kind of, they say goth rock I guess the,
death know, like, rock goth death rock, rock yes, goth, yes, yes
whole, I mean everyone I always mean. Points to Bela Lugosi's Dead by Bauhaus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
seminal
because that came out in 1979 2 years before Mask came out. Uh-huh. But before that, people would associate dark music with like Velvet Underground.
Velvet Underground,
yeah,
for
yeah.
sure.
Which is very mm-hmm. feedback noise, and you know they were heroin addicts. They all look like they're ghosts because they're white with the black
sunglasses. Yeah. You know, they carry black. That dark, that very off-putting aesthetic.
Yeah,
I would say them because they're also counted as influences for Bauhaus as well.
Yeah,
of course.
The whole with
does.
Everybody. Yeah. Joy Division. Everybody.
Bowie, of course. Bowie. Is there's no self-respecting goth that doesn't like Bowie.
Yeah, even like the Stooges, it's like there's a certain like side of it where it's kind of
dangerous.
Like dangerous. It's like the Stooges. Like you're treading the line of like death and pain and mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying. So a lot of that has some elements of like the human frailty. You know, like we can easily kind of fall into those trappings.
Yeah, and it's
but
that whole
sound wise, not necessarily. You know, but it's still that proto punk kind of thing. You know, it's very raw. You know.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's a pretty deep.
But I bet you there's a lot of underground bands we've never heard of or really made a big splash in the charts or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. that can be considered like grandfathers of this genre, you know, specifically.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Because there's a lot, like late 70s, I'm sure.
There's
a
lot of like synth bands that are.
Synth bands, yeah. Like, wow, you guys were doing that back then already, you know?
They sounded like, you know, like that, but then they look like, you know, 70s disco people. It's very weird on some of those, like, older synth bands that really didn't get too big that you see around.
I mean, a lot of the Beggar's Banquets bands, I'm sure, are like playing this kind of feel, you know, that they're trying to emulate.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But specifically a band, I can't, it's hard to pinpoint, huh? Definitely Bauhaus for sure, man. I mean, they were the grandfathers of all this.
Kind of pulled it all together, yeah. You know?
With look, sound, they, visuals.
Right. Yeah. They were glam influenced, you know, things, yeah.
What does officially together, what, 79, 78, Bauhaus?
79.
79. So even Joy Division predates them, man.
Yeah, by a year.
Right? Like
by
a few couple years?
Yeah.
As far as like...
when they did the Warsaw Mess.
Yeah, but that was still kind of the rock, right? That and then they kind of moved into
That was punk, you know? That was punk. Bauhaus was just like... I think they did see Joy Division. Ian Curtis actually went to see Bauhaus as well when they were touring.
Yeah,
when he was
and that wasn't... Closer was what, 80?
1980.
Yeah, yeah. So that was... And that's very dark.
It's
that's
crazy,
dark,
huh?
Dark.
How those two bands are synonymous, but at the same time, so different.
Oh, completely.
But they gave you the same feel, though. You know what I mean? It did give you the same feel.
Yeah, if you look at Atrocity Exhibition, you could say that could be a Bauhaus song.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like actual guitar.
But for sure, the Velvet Underground, that hopelessness, the feel of like, oh man, the despair, even though they're more into like that city drugs, the seediness of the big city life, right?
The sexual ambiguity.
Yes, that.
And then also the Velvet Underground also has a lot of noisy guitars. Like
exactly,
noise, feedback and noise.
And I can see the definitely roots of that.
Did a song called Rose Garden Funeral of Sores, which was written by John Cale.
There you go, see?
There it is.
So they're very much like, and there was a few instances where Peter Murphy had duets with Nico.
Nico was very druggy and all around the place at that time too. Yeah, that's right.
And okay, so final YouTube comment was by Ryan at at Estonia Heard. Literally lost my virginity to this one. I choreographed it that way. Such a dork, but I stand by my musical accompaniment of choice to this day.
Wow.
Imagine
she lost it to melted David J, right?
And David J's drooping eyeball. He's like, oh man, nothing gets my juices flowing to David J's drooping eyes.
Hey man, you can lose it to something worse. Like,
J stands for juice, man.
David Juice.
He could have been a little bit born later and lost it to I don't know, Glycerine by Bush or something, you know?
That's funny. I just heard that song today.
Oh really?
Work, Glycerine. Because 90s on 9 is a staple there.
Oh, yeah, 90s, man.
Or Silver Chair or something, you know? Even Flow.
Are you talking about Mookie Blaylock, that band? Okay, Bauhaus Mask. Would you keep it or would you throw it back?
Oh, well, I'm rusty, man. I don't know what to... Let me lay this out real quick. If somebody asks, hey, what's this song about? Or what do you think lyric-wise, visuals, sound? Where would you go first?
I would think...
You read the lyrics?
No, I didn't.
It's very, very poetic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's deep.
Because the thing is, like, when I first heard the song, I saw the video almost around the same time. So it's always been synonymous in my head, the visualization of it. So, like, I could not separate the two. So I always imagine this fucking creepy-ass figure coming to life or just haunting you, following you through wherever, you know, as you're covered up in Groot sticks.
But, you know, I thought about it, and if I were to boil it down, I thought, well, maybe reading the lyrics, I kind of read through it, I'm like, you know, because I'm a fan of lyrics. I like really reading what something is about, you know, but I boil it down to, like, the word release, right? Like, this, we all have this darkness inside of us that kind of needs to come out. But at the same time, we have to be able to control it. I mean, you know, I wrote this line, from the growth underneath the closed mouth you'll catch if you listen. You know, I mean, that's a cool... It's crazy, you know, like... But, you know, sometimes we want to say what we say. It's really about what our actions, right? Like, it's how we interpret ourselves. But matching the sound, matching the visuals, I felt like a lot of it is him coming to life, right? And the crescendo is this him, like, you know, like really trying to get whatever that is, whatever that thing is inside of him. And at the end of it, he goes back
to
where he was from the beginning, right? He had a chance to let it out, but then you have to kind of like tamp it back down and
well, there's like true self and then the mask you wear.
Yes, you know, like as a human being, right? Yeah. We wear these different hats, right? Like we're this, we're that. I felt like that was, and it coincides with this album, their second album, as being like their kind of like their breakthrough almost, right?
Yeah,
the first one was excellent, but the second one was really like kind of elevated them to a new level, right? And I think they foresaw that, hey, we need to kind of show them who they are, you know, both visually, artistically, and overall, man. I mean, it's something that I would want to do, like just the effects, the practical effects they use. It's very entertaining. It's cool. And
on a minuscule budget.
Yeah, on a minuscule, exactly, you know.
Car batteries.
But, yeah, dude, this is
jumping
good.
Fences, yeah.
But definitely a keep. Yeah, it's good. It's cool.
Yeah. For me, man, I've never seen this video before. Oh, this is my first time.
Me too. I've never seen this video before.
So yeah, when I threw in the suggestion, that you were like, you had no idea.
No, it was fascinating. All right, let me see some.
No, yeah, it's good. No, this is one of the things I love about music videos is the perfect melding between the song and the video. And I don't know what you could do other than that to this song. And I don't know what song you could do to that video. You know, like, it's perfect together. I love the, artistry of it. I love what they're going for. I love their influences. You know, all the influences. You could see the influences, but they're turning them into their own thing. And then when you read about how, it was, stolen footage, they had to sneak in, all this different thing. And then
it's gung-ho, all right?
What they did with the budget, is amazing. I don't even know what that Groot thing was. And that might have scratched him up bad. They might have just found something
basically,
a tumbleweed or something.
They took a tumbleweed and put it on David J.
Cocooned him in it, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what's this, guys? What are you guys doing, lads?
No, this is definitely a keeper. It's, it's just...
It's quintessential goth, too,
great,
what I mean?
Early video making, man.
Yeah. 1981. I mean, Video Killer Radio Star was just, a couple years before this?
Year and a half, maybe.
Right, and this is a promotional video,
Exactly,
MTV, this was made without even MTV in
See,
mind.
See, I love promotional videos.
Yeah.
Because I think the freedom is there,
Promotion videos are really, really cool.
Much better than actual produced. All right, let's make it for this.
It's kind of cool when you see a promotion video that's a video that's not just a live performance, which a lot of them are just a live performance. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we touched upon that with Bohemian Rhapsody,
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, as for me, of course I'm keeping this one. You guys already kind of reiterated it as far as the overall feel and... on a small budget, they could cram in this rather unforgettable video. And, with Peter's charisma, his acting, they've done a music video before this one. It was for Telegram Sam. Mm-hmm. And that video had that kind of darkness feel as well. They filmed it in a little boiler room alleyway kind of thing. But that doesn't compare to this music video a year later. With Peter's charisma, he acted... Years later, really, he's done the Maxell commercials. He's shown up in one of the Twilight movies.
Oh yeah,
that's right. I forgot about that.
He played the first vampire in the Americas, I think.
Wow,
that's what his character was. He was the elder vampire. Yeah. And the guy can just straight up perform when he wants to. And and the guy's a treasure. Ego aside, and his drug use aside, I wish that he kept himself a little healthier so
we could enjoy him for longer.
He can enjoy him for longer and enjoy his own life and with his family.
But sadly, a lot of times, unfortunately, you need those things to bring.
Well, yeah, you medicate with that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
To bring that side of you to come out.
Or even to tap down
again,
that side
back
away.
To release,
it's not just Peter Murphy who did drugs. I mean, the
of course,
entire band.
Most musicians.
The entire 80s did drugs.
Yes. The decade was snorting.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I'm keeping a music video.
Wait a minute, what happened?
I'm definitely keeping a music video, I'm sure, because it's in my opinion the best Bauhaus music video. The same group, did another music video to follow, to follow up their third album, which is the Sky's Gone On album. Mm-hmm. There's a track called Spirit in there.
Mm-hmm.
They had more budget than this one, but Bauhaus hated that video.
Oh, really? Wow.
They hate that video. They pulled out from their own accounts to reshoot the video to release it and said, destroy this video. Destroy this monstrosity. But that's the one that got out.
Wow. It still got out even though they put their own money?
Yeah. So whatever they did...
Well, the record company already just
wasted
it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Beggar's Banquet screwed them over on that one.
That sucks.
So yeah, it is a bad video. They even hated the track itself that came out from the music video, but the track that came out from the Sky's Gone On album was the one they wanted to do. So there's a distinct difference between the spirit in the song in the music video versus the one that actually came out in the Sky's Gone On album. At least they got that little victory out in there.
So maybe if they do a concert like Men Without Hats, they'll play the original at the beginning and then they'll play the remix at the end.
But yes, I'll keep this video. Keeps. Wow. Triple keeps.
It's a good video, man. Good pick.
All right. Okay, Ryan, so what you got next for us?
All right, we're taking a plane 1 year later into the future and we're going to do the classic Flock of Seagulls 1982 Iran.
Ooh, nice.
So listeners, don't run too far away. Stay with us. It's going to be a good episode.
All right. Oh, man.
Classic. That's a classic video.
There's a lot to talk about. You've seen the documentary, Al?
I have seen
the VH1. What is it called?
Bands Reunited?
Bands Reunited. This is like in the mid, early 2000s.
No,
it's very interesting. A lot of good stories.
It's on YouTube, yeah.
So, and you know, sadly, a lot of people think they're one-hit wonders, but guess what?
They are a lot
of great fucking songs.
Right,
man.
Like Iran wasn't even the first song heard from them.
Iran's not my favorite song from them.
Me neither.
Space Age Love Song.
There's so many good songs that
they
have.
Fucking banger,
man.
Dude.
Yeah.
But stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Iran, so close to 100 episodes. Congratulations, guys. We made it.
Congrats.
Century marks. Okay, guys, 100 episodes. What can we do to make the next 100 episodes a lot better?
Record them?
But yeah, we can, you know, we can use a little more cleaning up the past episodes. That's definitely a goal of mine when I find the downtime, which is making sure the ad breaks are more.
Or you do like one a day or something, or one every couple of days. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I would pre-apologize to any back catalog listeners of any abrupt ad breaks in the middle of a joke or something stupid that I said.
Well, I mean, it's all new. You know, everybody was learning.
It's a learning process. It's a never-ending learning process.
But
is the thing.
I would also like to thank anyone who hung around through all these years and through all these episodes. You know, even someone who just took a glance, took a chance on us. We appreciate it.
Man, we took a long break, huh?
Take a chance.
Last episode was uploaded in
October or something like that.
October, August, something like that.
Yeah, so it's almost
almost a year.
Yeah, almost a year.
A lot of life happened.
Right.
I mean, it's not like
we just stopped
existing. But yes, our schedules were just stupid.
It's hard, man.
It's really, because Ryan lives 20,000 miles away. Louis lives.
Are you open to
5,000 miles away?
Doing episodes on Zoom? Is that an option for you?
Well, absolutely. It's just that, like, I always thought that, you know, like, we could have done Zoom episodes for the 100th episode, but it just, to me,
just any episode, I'm saying.
Know? We've done it.
That's what I'm saying. So would you be like, let's say, all of a sudden, like, somebody has to do something and
won't
be available till a little bit later.
Yeah.
And that's an option, right?
Absolutely.
I'm just throwing it out there because I think the goal is to keep it as consistent as we can.
Right.
Because we had a good, pretty decent track. But again, it's hard to hold on to that, you know? It slips away.
Right. We had a few burns. I'm sure we kind of felt burned out for a little
bit. Yeah, that too, yeah.
You know, and people sometimes need a break. And it's not like this is our livelihood, but, you know.
But it's fun doing it. We love doing it for people who are interested in listening.
Absolutely.
I think that's what a lot of, like, when you listen to podcasts, when they do seasons, so then they don't have the burnout.
That's what
they do, like a whole season, and then they start a new thing or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they have a little vacation break.
Where we just do all videos, so we don't do kind of like, we're going to do all this year, you know? So it is a little bit different.
Yeah, it's not as structured, even though it's a structured show, but still. I mean, that's one thing, like, I'll try to make a better effort on research.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that I'm definitely guilty of is, you know, my lack of skill in researching even videos I host. So I need to be better than that. But I still hope you find our shows entertaining.
Yeah. We have a couple of tricks that we want to pull. A little bit of maybe adding to what we've already been doing, like, for example, maybe. Like themed, maybe themed episodes, maybe for the whole month, like we'll only be doing the, you know what I'm saying? Like just kind of, kind of shake it up a little bit, right?
Little surprises.
Yeah. You know, we talked about having guests in this podcast.
Yes, exactly. So this is a kind of like an ever-growing endeavor, you know? Like there's always something new that we can try out. Just even, because it'll make it more fun for us and it doesn't get stale.
Yeah, that's the thing too. It's hard too to kind of keep a social media presence as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
You know what we lack is kind of let's re-bring this episode back if we're not able to do it. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't say, it's been the same one and the dates have changed. Like a re-release of some sort, or maybe just a 15-minute thing of this or whatever. You know, like
that's the thing.
I mean, that takes time for you.
It's a little extra work for me.
Exactly.
But, like, I need to find some true. Like I need to balance out my time more doing this, because it usually takes me about, let's say, to edit an episode, I have to set aside an entire half of Saturday to edit it. Granted, like, hopefully my computer is a lot more powerful than what I used to have before when we started out, because that one was just dreadful to work with. But now it's a little smoother, so I think it's become kind of streamlined. I'd like to devote some actual, you know, like, I mean, even better production, really, too, even though I think it's been improved, but I know we had sound quality issues in the past episodes as well.
Well, that's the interesting part is that was after another hiatus, and then when we came back, right? And then it was...
So, you know...
You get rusty after you miss out, and so, you know...
You skip a couple of especially if months. This is not our livelihood, you know, not even our main skill, but... It's yeah.
But you guys aren't living off of this podcast?
I get monthly checks, man.
Yeah, I know. What
are you residuals?
You guys are like doing a class action loss for all the money I withheld from you guys, though.
Scott Aukerman pays me every month for this podcast.
That's funny.
But yes, thank you so much for listening to this one, and we will be back soon for episode 101.
Are we doing the whole entire Depeche Mode 101 concert? Nope.
All right, guys. See you next time.
Oh, shit. That was
Thank you for joining us at TMBR Podcast. We hope you enjoy our show as much as we enjoy recording it. You can subscribe to us through your favorite podcast feed and follow us at TMBR Podcast on Instagram. You can also leave comments, suggestions, and go rate us a 5-star on Apple Podcast.
All right, hello and welcome to episode 100 of Throwback Music Video Review Podcast, and today we will be reviewing Mask by Bauhaus, and this is a podcast that we will be reviewing this the music video of, you know, of this of Bauhaus Mask.
Sorry. You want to do it? I'll do it. I can do it.
Yeah.